gmail.com.
This is Chris Evans with a Storage Unpacked podcast, and I'm here with Martin. How are you, Martin?
Yeah, not too bad. How are you, Chris? It's been a while since we spoke.
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Thanks. It has been a while, yeah. Have you been keeping busy?
Yeah, pretty busy. Work's pretty hectic at the moment. Big product launch in my employer in the last 2 or 3 weeks. So, yeah, busy times.
Yeah, if you're in the UK, you probably almost certainly know what that launch is, don't you?
Well, I hope so. We spent enough on marketing it.
we won't dwell on that one. We'll carry on, shall we? And we'll see how that one goes the next time we speak. So this week we've got a guest, and we're going to talk to Jim Pappas about CXL. Jim, you are the chairman of the CXL Consortium. That's right, isn't it?
That's correct.
So why don't you just give us a bit more background, and then we'll have a quick chat about the topic for today, being CXL, and explain why you're here to help people understand what it really means.
Sure. So I am Jim Pappas. I work for Intel Corporation, and I'm the Director of Technology Initiatives. And in that, I drive lots of technical industry standards. And CXL is my most recent. And it's really a quite dynamic initiative right now, a lot of activity going on in the industry. So I'm really pleased to be here today to talk to you about it.
Excellent. So CXL, the acronym stands for Compute Express Link?
That's correct, yes.
Excellent. Wow, that's a good start. At least I got one thing right. So what exactly is CXL, and why is the consortium developing the technology? What's it actually for?
So CXL is a processor to a device link. That's where the L comes from, the link. And it's, if you're familiar with the PCI bus, most people are. By the way, the PCI bus was my very first technology initiative back in 1992.
Oh, right. And, okay.
Of course, PCI turned into PCI Express, which is what's out there in the industry now. And CXL actually layers on top of PCI Express. Okay. The PCI Express consortium, PCI Express SIG is what it's called, actually put a new function in, which is very, very useful, and it's called alternate protocol mode. And we take advantage of this. So we live on exactly the same wires, you know, at the same time, actually, as PCI. So a device will power up. We identify it as a PCI device, and then we could recognize that it supports CXL, and we completely change the protocol. And we'll talk more about that protocol as we go on in this podcast.
Okay. So what are people using CXL for, or what will they use it for when it becomes more widespread? Because my understanding is that this is a technology that allows me effectively to extend the amount of addressable memory that I have on my server, for example.
Yeah, memory is one of the key things that you can use CXL for. In a more generic term, you connect a processor to an accelerator. So as we see heterogeneous computing evolving, where work is shared between a central processor and purpose-built accelerators that could do very specific tasks very efficiently, that's really where CXL comes in, about allowing that a more efficient interconnect between the CPU and the accelerator than we can get with a traditional I/O interface like the PCI Express bus.
Okay, right. Excellent. Martin, just to bring you in on that, talking about why we would need this sort of technology, we've had quite a few discussions about memory hierarchy, different technologies that have been added in over the years. You know, it's an expanding area, isn't it? All the different technologies that we've seen being introduced.
There's a lot of around at the moment. It seems to be a very hot topic of conversation. And we can see all kinds of industry trends which are driving it. Things like AI, for instance, the size of these large data sets which you want to get in memory for compute. So, yeah, I'm expecting over the next 2 or 3 years, we're going to see more and more discussion around this sort of technology.
I think that's a key point, isn't it, Jim? You know, the applications out there that are driving this are driving more demand for, I guess, memory-centric compute, shall we call it, or at least more addressable data that they can get to quicker than they could do using, as you said, traditional I/O technologies.
That's correct. You know, for memory, it's really difficult to put memory on an I/O bus. The latencies are just make it impossible. You know, with things like storage, you know, we build protocols that are more latency tolerant. And, you know, we could have multiple operations operating in parallel with each other. There's all kinds of tricks that we use in the storage industry to get, you know, high bandwidth. And, you know, high bandwidth is important. But when you have memory, not only do you need high bandwidth, you also need very low latency. And when you have, unlike storage, when you have memory, there's no place to hide latency. Either available or it's not. And if not, the processor stalls if it needs the memory. You can't let that happen.
Yeah. So it's a very different set of requirements, but clearly there is a limit to how much memory we can put on an individual processor or a processor group. So we sort of need to find ways to get around that, don't we? And I guess that's what CXL is addressing.
That's certainly a big area that it's addressing. So, you know, up until systems, you know, including systems out there today, for the most part, there's only one place to attach memory, as to the memory bus that's, you know, coming directly off of the CPU. And those are very, you know, large number of pins. It's not very pin efficient. And, you know, it's a high bandwidth interface and they're expensive to put in. So you only get so many channels of memory. Then the next question is, how many devices can you attach to each channel? And as the memory interface has gotten faster and faster, the number of direct devices you can attach has shrunk. So yes, the number of channels and the speed of those channels and hence the fan out that you can get, yes, really limits how much memory you can have. Now, what's changing is with CXL is a new port. And now off of CXL, you could attach more memory controllers or memory buffers, sometimes they're called, where you could put much more memory if you want to, you know, to some extent, it could be almost limitless.
Okay. One other quick question before we dive into a bit more detail. I think it's probably worth considering or explaining to people, because they may not understand this in detail, because it's relatively technical. And that's the idea of cache coherency. And I think this seems to be something I think it's probably worth covering, because from my perspective, I guess I've got a background in, and Martin has as well, you know, in the mainframe systems programming, that sort of thing. So we probably understand the need for it, but it may not be obvious to everyone that that's a really, really important part when you try and do stuff with memory.
So yes, and this comes in, you know, where you see cache coherency today is in like dual processor or multiprocessor systems. So, you know, to explain what is going on there, let's say you have a dual processor system, we'll keep it simple. So you have two processors and they're attached by some proprietary link, and each different computer architecture has their own proprietary link, and we could do this. And each processor could reach across that link up into the memory of the adjacent processor and read or write that memory. And that happens both ways. Now, both processors, as you know, all processors have caches in them. And when you read memory, it gets put into a cache. Another thing that these links do is that they keep those caches coherent. So let's say that processor A reaches across and grabs some memory of processor B and now has it cached. If the processor changes that, well, there's a problem. You have the same, you know, memory, but it's got two different values in it depending what processor it's in. And what a cache coherency system does is make sure that they never get out of sync. So if one processor changes the data, it's that change is fed across that link, and the other processor is put into sync. So that's what cache coherency is. So this works today on these regular, you know, proprietary links to make these multiprocessor systems, but it doesn't work across I/O buses and other interfaces. And I know your next question is going to be, how does CXL do this?
Well, I guess it will be at some point. So let's move in and talk about that technical side of it in a bit more detail, because I think now that we understand some of the challenges here about what you're trying to achieve and what you're trying to do, as we dig into it, I think it'll probably make a lot more sense. So exactly what will CXL look like to the end user? How will it be implemented? And what do we think systems will look like that have implemented the technology?
Well, at the physical layer, it will look exactly like PCI Express. and in particular PCI Express Gen 5. And PCI Express Gen 5 is not currently in the market, but it should be in 2022.
Okay.
So it will look exactly like that. The pins are exactly the same, named the same thing. And what happens is that it starts up as a PCI device. When you learn that it can do CXL, it knows how to speak CXL. That alternate protocol mode that the PCI SIG built in cuts in, and then the CXL protocol takes over the same wires.
So does this mean PCI 5 and CXL will exist at the same time across the same, I'm going to call it a bus. I know PCIe isn't technically a bus, but we tend to use that term. But does it mean that they'll coexist? So you won't lose all of your PCIe 5 functionality and have to just use CXL. Can they coexist at the same time?
Yes, they do coexist on the same exact same wires. Now, depending on the device that you plug in, you know, if it's only a PCI device, it'll stay a PCI device, you know, for the duration. If it's a CXL device, then it switches over. It stops using the PCIe protocol completely.
Right.
And is replaced by the CXL protocol. But that doesn't mean you can't do PCI operations, because CXL has three distinct modes. One of them is called CXL.io. And for all practical purposes, it is exactly the same as PCI. So you could do PCI within the three CXL protocols. One of them is it's called CXL.io, and that IO is functionally the same as using PCI Express.
Okay. So devices will look like a PCIe device looks today, similar form factor, similar sort of design, but obviously just running a different protocol.
That's correct.
Okay, let's just ask the question then, how does that, and this I guess is a question to try and make something that's a bit more clear for people to understand. How does CXL therefore differ compared to, say, something like NVMe or RDMA? It sounds to me like it's a much lower level protocol, or would that be a mistake to describe it like that?
Well, first of all, when you look at, so let's say NVMe first. NVMe is a protocol that runs over the PCI bus, and it's very specific to storage. In fact, it's very specific to SSD storage.
Yeah.
And it's a more efficient way of talking to the SSD. So yes, that's a higher level protocol that runs over the underlying PCI Express.
And compared to, say, RDMA, which would be more, you know, memory focused. I mean, I'm not trying to muddy things up a bit. I'm just trying to, you know, think how we might try and position them in our own mind.
Yeah. So RDMA has been popularized with InfiniBand and Rocky. Rocky is sort of like InfiniBand over Ethernet. And so, yeah, between InfiniBand and Rocky, they both support RDMA. And RDMA is more of a networking type of protocol, not an I/O type of protocol, although the processor talks to the NIC that does the RDMA operations over a PCI bus. And then there's an RDMA engine built into the InfiniBand or Rocky controller. It talks to another InfiniBand Rocky controller in another machine, and then the data moves over the PCI bus into the processor. So what RDMA fundamentally does is it allows you, unlike networking, that each packet is kind of independent of the others. You know, it's sent out with an address and it gets routed, etc. With Rocky, you set up what's called queue pairs. Yeah. And these queue pairs are, you know, direct links that are between two different processes on two different nodes. And it's not even though it goes over the I/O interface, the data actually leaves a processor's memory space. It goes across the wires and goes into the other processor's memory space. So it gets rid of a lot of the overhead that an operating system would put into a general I/O. It's direct application to application communications at a networking level. By contrast, CXL is more of a I/O or memory interface type of level.
Okay.
We could talk more about that later.
Great. Okay. I think, Martin, you know, this gets a bit confusing, doesn't it, for people when you start to see all these different types of features and technologies you can use, and trying to work out exactly where they all fit is a challenge for some people, for all of us, I guess, a lot of the time. So, what, you know, how do you think we should be thinking about how this is all positioned? Because I'm not confused, but I'm certainly trying to think in my own mind how we sort of work out how all these things come together.
Way I was thinking at CXL is actually the way it works. So really talking about how you're talking to the underlying, really aimed at the hardware accelerator card. That's the use case where you want your host CPU and your hardware accelerator to, well, you want the host CPU to be taught directly to the memory just to speed things up so you're not copying large things around. And I think really focusing on the use case may actually be a lot better than just trying to think about the differences between the protocols.
Okay, so why don't we do that then? Why don't we have that conversation, Jim? Talk about the different protocols that you've got there and how that translates into some sort of use case for the technology.
So as I said earlier, CXL has three different protocols. One is CXL.io, which, as I said earlier, is essentially the same as PCI Express. The next one is CXL.cache, and the third one is CXL.mem. So we probably should go into a little bit of discussion, you know, what those do, but maybe even before we do that, maybe we should ask, you know, why would you want to do that?
Okay. Yep. Use cases and why you'd want to do it. I guess from my perspective, I'd look at it and say there are things that you'd want potentially to offload to a device that can do it better than the central processor can do it. You may want to address a wider memory space and therefore want to be shuffling data around in memory, but giving the impression that you've got a much more larger memory space, so you're not going in and out to device. I guess there's a whole set of use cases, isn't there, for each of those different technologies?
Right. So let's look at how accelerators are implemented today on the PCI bus, because there's all kinds of accelerators. There's GPUs, there's FPGAs, yep. There's AI machines, etc. So how are they, you know, created? Well, they sit there on the IO bus, the PCI Express bus. And in use, the CPU transfers a bunch of data over those wires down to the accelerator and then says, I want you to work on these. And then the accelerator does work, and it's very specific to the type of data that's on hand and the rule that it wants to accomplish. And then later on, it might pass results or a different data set. It could be, you know, it could be a large amount of data down and small results back. It could be a small amount of data coming down and then returning a whole bunch of data of facts. So in either case, you know, it's done with this very distant kind of relationship. The processor takes data, it transfers it, and later on, sometimes later, the data comes back processed and the processor can continue with it. Now, how CXL is different, let's go back where we talked about, you know, these dual processor systems where you have two adjacent processors and they could reach into each other's memory space and yep. They could, you know, grab things and they could cache the data locally in both and the caching stays consistent. Well, that works across two processors, but it doesn't work across an IO bus. With CXL, this changes. Okay. So now the accelerator would be more like an attached processor than as a IO device across an IO link. So now between using CXL.mem and CXL.cache, those two other protocols, now CXL.cache allows us to have to reach across and read each other's memory and cache it and keep those caches coherent. So now the application could be written so that part of the application is running on the CPU, part of the application is running on the accelerator, and that memory could be essentially in one place rather than shipping it back and forth. And the accelerator could reach in and grab the memory it needs, or the CPU could reach in and put the memory where it needs to go and back and forth. Same with results. So it's a much closer working relationship. And for the first time, accelerators are appear in many ways to the CPU that they're attached to. And CXL.mem allows sometimes there's, you know, memory attached to the accelerator as well. Sometimes there's none. Sometimes there's memory attached. with CXL.mem or CXL.memory, that memory could be mapped into and part of the coherent memory space and of the processor that it's attached to. So it could be, you know, added into the amount of memory that the overall system has, and it could be accessed by either machine, just the same way, you know, that I described with the cache mechanism earlier.
I'm starting to get a hang of where I think I might be able to describe it a bit better than I have been doing it so far. And it sounds to me like you're creating a coherent single memory namespace, for want of a better description, which can be accessed by any device which happens to be sitting on the PCIe bus, which is now CXL interface. And now rather than doing, say, copy tasks, I effectively have got zero copy, a bit like I have with other technologies where I write directly to it rather than copying it and moving it first. So I'm reducing that level of latency. So it's like a single coherent namespace for memory and devices.
Yeah, I think that that's a very good description. And, you know, what we're doing is now allowing application accelerators and CPUs to work much more closely than they can over an I/O bus.
Okay. Martin, this sounds like so many opportunities, so many things you could be doing here. It sounds like really interesting, a really fantastically interesting area.
Well, it does. I mean, certainly for a lot of stuff which I get involved in my job, which I work for a broadcast and content producer. Obviously, we do a lot with GPU acceleration, but that involves moving a lot of memory, a lot of data between memory spaces. To have this as a coherent space across devices and the host, and allowing the CPU to do what the CPU is good at doing, the GPU to do what it's good doing without copying all this data backwards and forwards, I think it opens up a lot of opportunities for improved performance and capabilities.
Yeah. Jim, one question that suddenly springs to mind that it's probably not one we sort of discussed or had on our agenda, but I'm always trying to find analogies or similarities to other things. And I remember the days when we first had PCIe drives, so things like the Fusion I/O technology, and they plugged into PCIe, but they didn't have any direct API to talk to them other than a proprietary API. So you install drivers on the host in order to talk to those devices. And it seems to me that the development of NVMe sort of basically fixed that and standardized that so that you could plug any Fusion I/O type device in and it would work in your system. I'm getting the impression from what you said so far that CXL is almost like a standardization protocol for accelerators and other types of technology that needs to address memory rather than I/O.
You're right, using Fusion I/O. I mean, they're a very innovative company and they had, you know, extremely popular drives.
Yeah.
But it was the proprietary interface that got into their way. You know, there's companies are always hesitant to implement single vendor solutions.
Yeah. What type of devices do we think we're going to see then? I think the obvious is offloading of GPUs and using accelerators to do that. But it strikes me that there's not really a limit on the type of devices we could have. We could create all sorts of different technologies. There's a whole host of different ideas. It's going to become a question of creativity, isn't it?
Let's go back to storage as an example. So you talk about NVMe. So right now, NVMe runs over the PCI interface. There's no reason that it couldn't run over the CXL.io because it's the same function. And there is an effort going on right now. Like in SNIA, they have an effort called computational storage.
Yeah.
And that activity is you basically have an SSD, and on the SSD itself, you have an accelerator. And the accelerator could, you know, do functions for the CPU. You could search it, or you could do other things. You could encrypt the data. You could, you know, whatever. You could,
I guess, create metadata from it and things like that. All that
sort
of thing.
Yes, all types of stuff. Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, key value stores and, you know, one thing after another. Actually reading and writing the SSD, if you're reading a block of data, the I/O bus does a great job at doing that. And NVMe is a great protocol on top of the I/O bus to make that happen. But if you want to talk to the accelerator, well, we might see the accelerator is talking to the CPU via CXL.cache and .mem, that very close, tight relationship that I talked about earlier. And yet the data transfer, the reading and writing of the SSD would use NVMe, presumably over CXL.io. This is an example where something like an SSD becomes intelligent. It is an accelerator. So that is where CXL really could make a difference.
Mm. Martin, I can think of a whole host of different clever technologies, like, you know, an encryption card you put into something, or a device that is a bit like a dongle, you know, an encryption device that just sits in the servo, or something you attach dynamically just for the time that you need to use it in order to access that data or do something similar. You know, there's some amazing ideas you could really come up with this.
Yeah, it could be transformational. Really want to see how this goes. In the same way, PCIe itself, or PCIe to start with, PCIe transform things, and now this could be a interesting technology. What I'm kind of interested in is we're talking about standard. How's it going to shift between vendors? Are we going to see widespread adoption? We've had promises of things like this before. So yeah, I'm really interested to hear what the future of the roadmap is, and how the standards. How wide the consortium is, and how wide it's going to be adopted, not just by the CPU manufacturers, but also those people who are actually going to be creating these new cards.
And what's the answer to that one, Jim?
So, as I've said earlier, I've run many, many consortiums, dozens of consortiums over my second career. My second career started in 1992 with the PCI bus.
Yep.
So, you know, I did PCI. I was Mr. USB for several years in the industry. You might remember that. And just think of the world prior to USB.
Yeah, I can also remember a lot of issues with USB, on especially Windows, with it, you know, the old in and out stuff. So USB was a great technology. It was a step forward, I think, again, at standardizing something that otherwise would not be standardized. And that's the key bit, isn't it, here?
Yes, but the standardization, you know, leads, not guarantees, but it leads towards interoperability. And as the size of the ecosystem increases, the interoperability challenge does not grow linearly. It's very nonlinear growth as the size of the ecosystem. And I consult on many, many new technology initiatives. And one of the first things I always ask at the beginning is, what's your interoperability plan for this? And sometimes I get blank stares. And they say, well, we're going to farm it out. And I know those are going to fail.
Yeah.
So you need to look at this. And it's something that we're doing. But to come back to your original question, was that, you know, how big is the ecosystem? Well, first of all, in order to have a coherent interface, you must have a coherent link into the CPU. Otherwise, you can't do it. You can't accomplish the task. You can't go over an IO bus and sprinkle some magic coherency bits. It doesn't work. So you need to have a memory interface. So we wanted to get the CPU companies on board, and every major CPU company is now a part of the CXL consortium and a member of the board.
Okay.
So that was a clean sweep. That takes, you know, probably 90% of the probability concerns get washed away with that.
Yeah.
And the consortium overall is, I looked this morning, it was 170 members. It goes up constantly. Every week we get a report, and it's almost every week it changes. So, we're a very, very strong consortium. And if you look at the companies who are driving it, there's a lot of, just about every company of importance is a big part of CXL.
So we sort of talked about the protocols. We talked about how devices might look and the sort of tasks they might do. But what's actually out there? What's out there today? I mean, we know we're waiting for PCIe 5 to be generally available so the technology can be used. But, you know, are we months away, years away from seeing actual products come to market that people can buy?
Well, first of all, CXL is not launched in any CPU products yet. So it's, but it's planned to be launched in 2022. So next year, you will be seeing CPUs that are launched using this bus. We just at Intel, we had an event last week or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, called Innovations.
Yep.
And we had in the industry showcase area, the innovation showcase, I think we called it, we had 10 demos. And most of those, 7 or 8 of them, were CXL demos. So these are multiple companies plugging their products, their prototype products, into, you know, or their pre-production products is maybe a better way of saying it, into our pre-production platforms. Most of these demos will be also shown, I believe it's next week, at Supercomputing. So SC21 is located in St. Louis, and there is there's a CXL pavilion there, and you'll see these demos and others being demonstrated in the CXL pavilion, and next door in the there's an industry standards pavilion, which is also it's adjacent to this, and you'll see CXL demos in both.
So does this mean we need to see another processor generation in order to see this technology come in? Are we expecting it to be like the net and you know the next something lake or whatever it happens to be from Intel?
Well, I'm not here to do any product announcements, but it is public knowledge, I believe, at this point that Intel's next Xeon CPU has native support for CXL.
Okay, that's fair enough. I mean, I guess that answers the question that it's imminent, it's in the roadmap. So that's stuff we already know.
That's correct, and we're really excited about it.
Yeah. Any thoughts there, Martin?
March of progress ever carries on, doesn't it? We're getting used to this, and we can look at that and say, well, the next Intel Xeons, I'm expecting the next generation of EPICs to have it. It looks like it's going to be table stakes in the server arena for certainly from 22 onwards. I did notice that I assume this is a CXL 1.1, which is getting launched, but I also see the 2.0 specification is already out as well. So it just seems like even before we launch, we're already looking at the next generation product.
You know, well, that's not unusual. There's always the next generation spec in development, you know, in parallel with the previous generations. 1 to 2 was particularly quick, and it adds a lot. So CXL 1.1 is completely, as I talked till now, it's directly CPU directly attached to an accelerator. The wires physically connect together.
Right.
As we know, the PCI Express, as an example, allows switching. PCI Express switches can be put in. And with CXL 2.0, we now support switching as well. So with this, we can now have much more fan out. An individual processor could talk to a much larger number of devices. We call them accelerators for now. Later on, we'll talk about memory as well. But for right now, we've just been talking about them as devices. The other thing that is possible, you could also have multiple CPUs attached to a switch and sharing a pool of accelerators, as an example. So this could be used for disaggregation of computing. Now, these processors would still remain independent processors, each with their own version of the operating system and VMs and everything else, and still running independent applications, and still with their own coherent memory spaces that don't get intertwined. But they could share all of the different types of accelerators that are attached to the bottom. And this may be a good segue to talk about one specific type of accelerator called a memory buffer or a memory controller.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, earlier I talked about, you know, the three protocols, CXL.io, CXL.cache, and CXL.mem. And I explained how if an accelerator has memory attached to it, it could be mapped into the coherent space of the CPU. Well, let's just take that one step further. What if that accelerator's sole purpose is just to attach memory? Now, all of that memory that's attached could be attached into the CPU that it's connected to. And now we have a way to expand memory very dramatically over what you can do just on the pins that are directly attached to the CPU. Now you could come out, you can go through a switch and fan it out. You could have multiple memory controllers, etc. So now the amount of memory that you'll be able to attach to a CPU increases significantly.
Yeah. So Martin, do you know what the first thing I think of when I hear that is, I think of Amdahl 5990, where I could actually physically, between different LPARs, shift blocks of memory and push them onto one particular LPAR, and then another day I could take a whole chunk of that memory and move it somewhere else. And I guess that's not exactly what this is, but it's very similar to it in the sense that I now got dynamic memory. So now, you know, we talk about disaggregation, where we've talked about disaggregation of devices. Now potentially we're talking about disaggregation of memory, and that's really, really interesting.
Well, this has been our common theme, hasn't it, Chris, over the past 6 months, talking about the disaggregation of the data center and all these technologies which are coming along. And some are proprietary. It looks like CXL could be the one which starts to unify how we do some of this, so it becomes something which you could see applying and ending up in enterprise data centers as opposed to just the purely hyperscale ones who might be okay with some proprietary stuff. So, I think disaggregation, we found our trend, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely we have. And that seems to be a big one that we've had over at least the last 6 months. And we've talked previously with other people about SmartNICs and other sorts of technologies that are coming along as well. We are seeing that real renaissance, I think, Jim, in some of this hardware that is really pushing the boundaries for the next set of, you know, evolutions of technology. And it's that pendulum swing of software catches up and then the hardware gives us something more and off we go again. It seems to me that we're really enjoying a bit of a hardware renaissance at the moment.
Yeah, if you let me accelerate this even more and elevate this even higher, the next thing I'd like to introduce here is that these memory controllers that I've talked about are memory buffers. And I also talked about the fact that there could be multiple CPUs also attached to the switch, right? And it's certainly possible, and it's expected, that these memory buffers will segment the memory that's attached to them into different regions and be able to assign each region of memory to a different host processor. So not only do you have memory expansion, you can now have memory pooling. And I'm using the word pooling, not sharing, very explicitly here. Sharing would imply that simultaneously any region of memory belongs to two different coherency spaces. That doesn't happen. We don't do that. But okay. A memory controller with lots of memory could then take different regions and assign them to different CPUs. So as the need for memory increases, you could dynamically increase the amount of memory attached to the CPU. That's something that is, well, I don't want to say that it's impossible to do today. I'm not sure if it's possible or not. But it certainly is very hard to do, and I don't think it's being done at all. So it's, you know, I expect to see memory pooling come on in here as well. And this is a big deal.
Yeah, I guess it was only done previously when we had more like system-wide memory, when the memory was not directly connected to an individual processor, not necessarily the Intel generation, but other vendors where memory sat above every processor and you had symmetric memory access. So maybe that's, you know, that technology maybe had it in those days, but that's going back quite a way in history, isn't it?
Yeah, but this is going to be able to be coming back. And, you know, the cloud service providers are really very interested in this because that's their biggest dollar spend is right now on memory, which leads to a problem for them because if not all the memory on one CPU is being used, they've paid for it, but it's not being used and can't be used anywhere else in the system. With pooled memory, you'd be able to reallocate memory across multiple processors. So the cloud providers are very excited about this.
Yeah, that's fascinating, Martin, because now you're really, yet again, I mean, so Jim, another line of our conversations is we talk a lot about the cloud side of things. And Martin and I have talked about how the optimization of the way that the cloud vendors have gone and the sort of things they're trying to do to improve this. This is yet another thing, isn't it, Martin, where optimization, making things more dynamic, looking at the individual cost of it and seeing how you can actually improve things.
Well, it's going to increase their utilization memory, which means that they can obviously increase their margins, they can make more money out of this. But yet again, I'm also think that within some of the larger enterprises, you look across a server, you can come across all kinds of differences in memory utilization. But if you've got one server which has got too much memory, what do you do? There's not a lot you can do with it. It's stuck over there. If you need it over there, you can't just shift it. This allows us to scale in a completely different way as well. We can start scaling that compute and memory very individually and dynamically and move this around.
You know, another thing that comes up with memory is now you could also have different tiers of memory with different cost performance characteristics. So you could use less expensive, somewhat slower memory, like previous generation memory in systems in the same platform where you have high performance memory. And then really depending on the needs of the application, you could choose where you want to put different types of data, which leads into my next aha. One of the areas is persistent memory. And persistent memory, like in my company, we have Optane memory as an example. I know there's other companies doing their own types of persistent memory that I expect to be seeing entering the market at some point here. And persistent memory is not only memory that you read, write, just like any kind of memory, but it's also persistent. This is, we talked earlier about storage and memory and that blurring between them. In the SNIA consortium, I've been leading the persistent memory effort for the last several years. And one of the problems of persistent memory adoption is it's very difficult to put into a system. This is the same problem I said earlier. The only place where you could attach memory is at this pin bus of the memory interface. Yeah. Now with and by the way, that runs at a certain speed. And in order to make persistent memory, you need to put extensions in there. And extensions, you know, always make it difficult for adoption. Now with CXL, you could have memory controllers that are very specific to persistent memory, and they come over this industry standard CXL interface. And with CXL 2.0, we've also introduced native support for persistent memory. So not only just, you know, how do you use persistent memory as a different speed or different characteristic of memory, but also things like atomic operations and flushes, etc. Those are those are characteristics that you need for persistent memory. You need to be able to flush your caches out and make sure that all the data is moved to persistence, particularly in a power event. So all of that is built in now to CXL 2.0.
You know, that makes me think that Optane doesn't then get tied to one single vendor in terms of the way it's used in the persistent memory format. You're not required to still use the proprietary DDR standards that you added to Optane in order to make it work in Xeon scalable CPUs. So theoretically, other vendors could then use it and use it on their products too. And vice versa, obviously there are, as you said, competing similar-ish persistent memory products, even though some of them aren't, they're not necessarily built the same way as Optane there. Similar-ish in terms of their endurance. So those sort of things could step in. I think the memory hierarchy, Martin, starts to ask questions around things like, can you now build systems where you've got very high-density VMs and you shift them around based on their activity? You know, you move them around in and out of memory depending on how busy they are or, you know, how much you paid in order to have that memory usage. You know, you pay for faster memory. You've got a mix of DDR5 and 4 in the same physical infrastructure. Now you could actually map them separately. So again, the cloud guys must be thinking, ooh, all these opportunities to make money again.
Oh, of course. But I can think of other places. It's not just VMs. It's within the world of data processing where you might want to hold all your indexes in something which is very high speed.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can see there's a lot of potential for everybody to optimize and improve performance and effectiveness. So you don't necessarily have everything sitting in your fastest memory. Then maybe green initiatives as well, which will benefit from that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So Jim, all of that's really interesting. And I think Martin and I just chatting there about some of those opportunities are really, you know, really, really sort of thought provoking about what we could have. But there must be more coming. There must be more down the line that, you know, that we can hope to hear. There must be a 3.0 or 4.0 already in development. You know, what can you tell us and what can't you tell us?
Well, in fact, you know, there's always the next generation coming. And yes, we are knee deep in CXL 3.0 right now. And I can't go into the details about this because it's NDA to the consortium. But any company can join the consortium and join at a level where you could participate in any of the working groups. So this is a completely open consortium that any company can join, any company can influence. So yeah, CXL 3.0 is coming. You can invite me to come back next year and maybe I'll tell you about that. I think you're going to be blown away.
I have to say, from what we've talked about today, this has been a fantastic introduction to the technology and really starts to get the juices flowing and the brain cells thinking about what could be possible. And without a doubt, we'll have you come back when you're in a position and you're able to talk about what's coming up with 3.0. But I think for now, Jim, it's been a great conversation. We've really enjoyed this and we appreciate your time. And thanks for really, you know, for taking us through it. And we are definitely looking forward to you coming back next time to talk about it again. So if people want to learn more, Jim, where should we point them to?
I'd recommend you just go to the CXL Consortium webpage. It's compute-express-link, all one word, .org. And on there, there's information, you know, if they want to join, certainly we welcome you. And there's also lots of training information, many webinars and training videos and blogs, etc. And there's a lot of information there to learn more about CXL.
Thanks, Jim.
Well, thank you, Chris and Martin. It's been my pleasure to be here.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.